All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Happy Friday, 6 past the hour, and we're in the second hour of Up North News, Up North News Radio for a Friday, November 18th. Coming up this hour, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher will join us to preview the upcoming weekend in sports. And Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, will help us review the coverage of all things post-election and even beyond. For example, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced yesterday that she will not be running for a position in House leadership, essentially getting set to turn things over to a new generation of leaders. And so while Speaker Pelosi was being honored by fellow Democrats on a fairly united front, over in the other room, you had Republicans in complete disarray as far as who the next speaker is going to be and how any speaker can possibly ride herd on the caucus like that. If you want to reach us, it's radio at upnorthnewswi.com or call us at 715-388-7155. As I said, with Dan coming on later in the hour, we'll focus more on sports then. But of course, if you're just waking up and didn't stick around for the end of the game, you didn't miss anything. Packers lost to Tennessee 27-17. So Green Bay has now lost 6 of their last 7 games. While the Packers were able to limit Derrick Henry, they weren't able to limit Ryan Tannehill, who threw 2 touchdown passes. Threw for 333 yards in the effort as well. Packers next play a Sunday night game at the end of Thanksgiving weekend, Sunday night in Philadelphia. And the Bucks are in Philadelphia to play the 76ers tonight at 6:30. I have been watching, I've been on death watch essentially for Twitter for the past couple of days here. And if you're not a regular Twitter reader, follower, addict like me or whatever, you're probably wondering what the big deal is. And I kind of want to try to explain it because it gets to a larger point about our failures since the Reagan era to have a government that is responsive to the people in making sure that businesses don't gather so much power in the marketplace that it ruins competition. And that can be said about Twitter, it can be said about Facebook, and can be said about a host of other industries as well. Meatpacking, there's only like 4 companies that control, you know, everything in the market there. But specific to Twitter, again, I don't frankly give, you know, 2 hoots about Elon Musk. He, made billions of dollars doing whatever he did. He's got Tesla that has had mixed success. He has had some kind of a beef with Twitter for the longest time, put out a price to buy it. He was rebuffed. He sued. They sued. Eventually, they gave him a key. Probably the dumbest thing ever done by that company. In he comes and begins firing people left and right and making wild claims and promises. And the workforce has either been doing the I quit or you're fired thing en masse. And it's got people wondering how much longer the company can continue to operate its platform with, you know, all of its millions, if not, you know, a billion users out there. So far for me, it seems to be working. I know some people have talked about issues with refreshing the screen, with downloading their Twitter archive so that even if Twitter crashes, they'll have a record of all of their tweets over the years. I haven't. I don't know that that's the most important thing in my life right now, but, you know, it's one of those things that might be nice to have. But again, it's there to use. I wasn't a big fan of it at first. I'm like, wait, so you have 140 characters to just say something? What good is that? And as I said, I'm borderline addicted to it because it has taken the place of the old teletype in the newsroom from the Associated Press or from United Press International. And now it's just a continuous ticker of news or hot takes or pretty pictures or whatever it is that you want to subscribe to, you know, as you choose who to follow. And I've got mine set for various lists of, you know, national news accounts, Wisconsin news accounts, you know, people I think are funny and whatnot. And it's been great, but I don't understand why it only has to be Twitter. Much like I've never understood why it only has to be Facebook, because it's not like this can't be replicated, if not exact because of, you know, trade secrets or what have you, then some other way to build that better mousetrap. You know, we were told back during when AT&T was broken up, when there was just one phone company, that if you deregulated, you would, you know, unleash the power of the marketplace and competition. And that's what happened. And that before, everybody just had a black rotary dial telephone. And pretty soon you saw all manner of phones and devices and plans. They're still way too expensive, but at least we saw diversity in the marketplace. And the same can be said for a lot of things. But where's the diversity in the marketplace? Where are the alternatives that are a better Facebook or a better Twitter? Or have we allowed companies to get so big that nobody dares even try? And I don't have an easy answer other than that government has to get better. But to do that, we're going to need people in government again who are focused more on their constituents, their individual consumer constituents, rather than the big businesses that can bring in unlimited cash now to politics. We'll take a break and have more after this. This is Up North News Radio. One time I said we could play Christmas music, you know, to mark that my Christmas cards are just about done. Now you're rubbing it in.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just looking at the camera outside, and right now it's a little bit hard to tell. Could just be falling off the top of the building, but I'm pretty sure it's snowing again in Madison.
Well, not here, though. We're going to get some up here in Chippewa County before much longer, and it's going to get so cold over the weekend. And I get it, it's still autumn till what, December 21st or whatever, but at least with this light coating that's out there right now, at least it's not annoyingly wrong to be playing Christmas music or see decorations up. So, you know, it's understandable that we would think we could play a little bit more Christmas music, but no.
Okay,
we're done with that for
all
a
right
while.
I'm totally fine with that. My mom watches Lifetime.
Now, look, some of these radio stations, they start sooner than ever. Some people start the day after Thanksgiving, some Thanksgiving night. What about you? When is it officially okay to decorate and play Christmas music?
I'm a post-Thanksgiving kind of person. I don't go, all right, it's time to decorate and listen to Christmas music the day after Thanksgiving. But I don't want to do it before then. That just seems obnoxious to me. I'm not.
Yeah.
Now, your own thing.
It is. I've, you know, when I was a younger adult, I was kind of more in the lines of like, not till like the second week of December. I'm like, let's not overdo this. You know, let's have an actual Christmas season around Christmas. And I have opened that window a bit more and more, that I no longer, you know, throw a temper tantrum if I see things going up the day after Thanksgiving. But frankly, there have been times where either the holiday spirit hits you or for whatever reason, you know, some people look at Thanksgiving night as a way to do it. I'd like to have at least a little separation in the seasons, but that didn't stop me from getting the Christmas cards ready. And as I've said before, we try to be very early Christmas shoppers, but the decorations and the music, let's have at least a little break, maybe.
Yeah, and I think doing the Christmas cards and the gifts early, that's just being prepared, not going into the season too early, because otherwise stuff's going to be sold out. Your cards aren't going to show up in time, either to you or the recipients. It'll all just be a mess. Whereas The consequences for not decorating sooner are that you don't have to do it yet, and your house will just not have decorations until whatever, the second week of December. That doesn't really do anything to anybody besides yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, like it or not, the season is here, and maybe we need the holiday season to form a buffer between the last election season and the next election season, which is going to be starting real soon. We talked in our last hour about former state Supreme Court Justice, conservative Dan Kelly, who is going to be running to get back on the court when a different seat opens up in April. And we are aware of at least two progressive judges who have said they're going to run for the court. And now we're hearing that Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro, who presided over the trial of the man accused of killing people in the Waukesha Christmas parade last year, that Jennifer Doro is considering a campaign for state Supreme Court. It's been noted by one of my favorite folks on Twitter. God, I'm going to miss some of these people if this thing crashes, noting that both Doro and Dan Kelly attended the televangelist Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network School of Law, renamed Regent University School of Law, which is ranked way down as a tier 4 school and was unaccredited when both graduated from it in the early 90s. But again, it gave a place for, you know, right-wing conservative folks to attend law school, and then for politicians to appoint them or for them to run for elections to judgeships and work their way up. So in both cases on the conservative side, whether it's Doro or Kelly, we're going to have people who are either going to campaign as hardcore conservatives to try to win an election that way, or will try to appeal with words of moderation. But again, the training enough is indicative that, you know, we've had plenty of people say one thing and then do another. Roe v. Wade, anybody? You know, stare decisis, you know, all settled law, anybody? No. Apparently, when you have political motives, you can say those things, but do something entirely different once you get on the Supreme Court, whether it's the state court or the U.S. court. Doro was appointed to the Waukesha County bench in 2011 by then Governor Scott Walker, and she is considering a run to replace Patience Rogensack, the right-wing justice, former chief justice, who is leaving the court. And that means that instead of a 4-3 conservative majority, the possibility is there that there could be a 4-3 progressive majority, depending on who gets in. There's Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, a longtime assistant prosecutor, is looking to run, as is Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell, a former prosecutor and the presiding judge of Dane County's juvenile division. So no matter how many candidates get in, if it's more than two, and it looks like it will be, there will be a primary on February 21st. And then the top two come out of there and go to the April 4th spring election. That's because these are nonpartisan offices. So there's not a Democratic primary and a Republican primary like there was in August. This one is all the candidates are in there because ostensibly they're, you know, they're all nonpartisan, right? Right? No? Anyway. So what could come out of this February 21st primary is probably most likely going to be a progressive and a conservative, simply by nature of the electorate. We're a very 50-50 state here. But it is not at all out of the realm of possibility that both of the conservative judges come out of the primary and face off in the general, or both the progressives for that matter. Between now and February 21st, you know, especially right after the first of the year, you will see more commercials for a state Supreme Court race than you ever thought possible. And if all four of these candidates get in, and again, they're not going to conspire with one another. Each one of them thinks that they're the best candidate. So other people on the outside will say, hey, you know, be sure you vote for these two, or be sure you vote for these two. But all four of them are going to make the case that they're the best choice for whatever reason. They may go with, you know, the law and order cliche and all of the, you know, dog whistles that come along with it. They may use all kinds of other slogans, but the ones that can get access to money to run ads, those are the ones that are going to be more heavily favored. And again, if progressive donors and groups and national groups don't come in, and I'm not saying they have to, I'm just saying that if they don't, let me make clear that conservative groups are going to come in. They're going to come in hard, either for Kelly or Doro or maybe somebody else who hasn't gotten in the race yet. And some of them may be that direct to say, vote for these two, you know, conservative law and order types. And the question becomes, A, who shows up on February 21st to vote in the primary? And B, how many of them, how are they basing their information? Are they basing it just off of TV commercials or on things that they, you know, heard at the diner or what have you? So this is definitely going to be a program right after the first of the year that is going to focus hard on this race, because we think voters should focus hard on this race. We want to equip you with the information that you need about the candidates, about their records, about their, you know, their potential as, you know, and the stakes on the state Supreme Court and why that race matters so much. Yes, the governor's race matters a lot. It was a big deal that Tony Evers defeated Tim Michaels. It was a slightly less big deal, but no less important, you know, the U.S. Senate race that was just completed. But this is for a seat determining control of the state Supreme Court, a state Supreme Court that currently, with its conservative majority, has ruled out of thin air that ballot drop boxes are, you know, illegal, that struck down COVID-19 safeguards designed to keep people from dying in waves, and a host of other decisions like upholding the gerrymandered maps that we have. And in fact, choosing even more gerrymandered maps, you know, upon further review. These things and so many more can come up before this court. If that majority flips, you'd see, you know, a new wave of lawsuits and, you know, calls to give a new interpretation of state law. And again, I'm not saying that if it went 4-3 progressive that, you know, it would solve all of the ills in Wisconsin jurisprudence, but it would be a start. And so you'll definitely want to look for that. And it led to my attempt at a question of the day, although I still have to shorten it up and say, how should we be picking state Supreme Court justices? Right now, we do it through a nonpartisan election, but there are also states that, you know, get rid of that illusion of nonpartisanship and actually have partisan elections. For example, Illinois would be the closest one, but Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, and New Mexico all have partisan elections. Wisconsin is among the states that has a nonpartisan election, along with Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, Arkansas, Mississippi, Georgia, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Well, that's not all the 50 states, Pat. What's going on there? Well, that's what I want to get at, is whether we should consider what some other states do, which is to have some form of what's called assisted appointment, which is essentially a nominating commission reviews the qualifications of judicial candidates and then submits names to the governor, who would appoint a judge from the list. Now, it's who's on that commission that also has to be determined. Is it a commission that is nominated or appointed just by the governor? Is the legislature involved somehow? Is the state bar association involved in some way, shape, or form? Or do you simply have judges that are selected by the state legislature? You know, that's certainly a route to go as well. There are only a couple of states that still do that. It looks like Virginia and South Carolina are the only ones. And the rest have some form of assisted appointment. So at some point today, if you monitor the Up North News Facebook page, I'll put up a graphic that asks how you think state Supreme Court justices should be chosen in Wisconsin. And, you know, again, can't promise that that's going to happen, but at least we can get the ideas out there for a system that I think almost all of you are going to think is going to be better than the one we have now. You might think the system we have now works pretty good, but I'm going to ask if you still feel that way by the time we get the next April. Mark Jacob, editor from the Chicago Tribune, former editor as well of the Chicago Sun-Times, joins us coming up next. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
You know, I could tell you that Mark Jacob is a former Page One editor at the Chicago Tribune, a former editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. And that's what he pins at the top of his Twitter feed. But I think he needs a new pinned tweet, which he wrote yesterday. No one sets out to be an old media crank, which is why only a few of us ever attain full crank. And from one full crank to another, Mark, thank you for that. And good morning.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was kind of inspired by the little like self-reflection here, because it's really easy for people who used to be in the media to criticize the media, or media, people who are on the fringe media to criticize the mainstream media. So it was just a little bit of self-reflection on that. But, you know, that doesn't mean we're wrong. It just means that we're cranky sometimes.
Well, it's like you said about Elon Musk and Twitter. I wondered if maybe there was a method to the madness, and your response was, you know, sometimes madness is just madness.
Yeah. Sometimes it is. I mean, I don't, you know, I defy anyone to figure out that why what he's doing now is good for him or the bottom line or anything else, or democracy for that matter.
No. When you have this kind of real-time communication about potential threats to democracy and stuff, that would be a shame to have it go away. We're going to talk about how the media has covered the post-election landscape across the country. And one thing I haven't brought up at all that I want to start with you is just this entire telegraphing of priorities that, you know, all we heard was crime, 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 inflation, inflation, inflation. And yet the first thing out of the chute pretty much is going to be an investigation of Hunter Biden. Am I missing something, or is there a way to fight inflation by, you know, investigating Hunter Biden?
No, it's just amazing how negative and backward looking the Republicans are. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be amazed, but you know, I'm the kind of person who every 6 months reminded people on Twitter that Trump, when he was running for office, promised to give everyone health care. And, you know, and then he spends 4 years and never comes up with a plan. I mean, for health care, for something that's actually important, Pat, not Hunter Biden's laptop, but. And somehow that passes. Somehow that's okay. That, oh, it just slipped his mind to come up with a healthcare to help poor people get to see doctors. I mean, yeah, the priorities are way out of whack. But again, I think that the House Republicans are going to turn it into, you know, a total circus. I think it'll be bad for both the country and for the Republicans. At least I hope it'll be bad for the Republicans. It should be.
I swear to God, they're going to find a connection between Hunter Biden and Benghazi, just as right. A reason to bring that up again.
Yeah, probably will. That's it. The Benghazi thing was the same way. It was like you just kept on hearing about it. And I'm not saying that there wasn't some kernel of something important in Benghazi. Fine, we had investigation, and then we had another and another and another and another. But you know, but that doesn't get anyone, you know, insulin they can afford. It doesn't get anyone. You know, I mean, there are just a lot of problems we have in this country. So let's like come up with ideas to solve them instead of, you know,
But let's give the free advice to national newsrooms based on something here in Wisconsin. When former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman was named by Assembly Speaker Voss to do a quote unquote investigation into the 2020 election. I mean, at Up North News, we were probably the first and only for a while that was putting investigation in quotes or saying so-called or alleged investigation. And we were vindicated when a judge hearing one of the many lawsuits against Gableman reviewed what he had done and said something along the lines of, I don't know how any outside person could look at this and call it an investigation, because it never was. And you note in a note to news media, investigations run by fascist politicians are not honest investigations. They are disinformation and harassment. If you take them seriously, we won't take you seriously. Again, the bottom line being, national media needs to be really careful about the word investigation.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, though, because they will be really, you know, they will be official investigations by official bodies. And so the news media will have to cover them, you know, in one way or another. But they just don't have to take them seriously when they don't see any evidence. I mean, the thing about the January 6th committee, I mean, we wouldn't have taken that seriously if they hadn't come up with evidence. But here they were with, you know, witness after witness, with document after document, with emails, with everything. They came up with real things that made sense. But I'm actually worried that all this Hunter Biden stuff is going to be, you know, considered news, whether it is or not. And, you know, let's see, the thing that's silly about the Hunter Biden thing to me is that if Hunter Biden committed crimes, I think he should be prosecuted, you know, and put him on trial. You know, if he's guilty, put him in jail. Fine with me. There's this myth on the right that people on the left, you know, are trying to cover up for Hunter Biden, and it's going to be some sort of, it's going to cause us, you know, to have a heart attack if he gets punished. I don't care. If he committed a crime, he should get punished. You know, there's this idea that meanwhile, you got the former president of the United States who's clearly committed crimes, and they don't want those prosecuted. So there's a lot of hypocrisy going on there.
Oh, without a doubt. And look, nobody who, first off, if you don't know anything about Hunter Biden, if all you know about him has been through news reports, stop. And go, there have been a couple of good in-depth articles about him. He has not made the best choices in life.
Right.
And again, but if they have risen to the level of actual crimes, then yes. But when you review his life with an open mind, you go, not a smart man and didn't make a lot of good choices. But the only reason that it's the focus that it is that there's, you know, Joe Biden's opponents have nothing else to go on. And so they cling to this when they should be looking at characters who are genuinely doing something disreputable, which takes us to Justice Clarence Thomas and whether he should continue participating in any cases related to January 6th, given that his wife, Ginni Thomas, was basically a coup plotter. And Mark, you make note of it from time to time, but I feel like there's still not nearly enough being said about him still being able to participate.
Well, the problem there is that there really are no ethics rules for the U.S. Supreme Court, which is astounding to me that nobody came up with them, but maybe they're just so powerful that nobody could tell them what to do. But I feel like it's a failure of the other justices that they don't just sit Thomas down and say, you're not going to participate in January 6th related cases. You're not. We're not going to accept your participation. I mean, I don't know how that would all go down. And certainly Thomas could say, you know, screw it, I'm a justice just like you, I'm going to. But there ought to be some, I mean, the fact that John Roberts, who supposedly is Chief Justice, hasn't been able to put the hammer down on Thomas to just recuse himself from cases involving his insurrectionist wife is pretty astounding. I mean, it's disqualifying. He ought to quit.
And once again, much like Wisconsin kind of led the way in a shameful way with Act 10 and with gerrymandering, Wisconsin actually kind of led the way on this as well with the aforementioned Michael Gableman, who got on the state Supreme Court using an ad that was so wildly racist, but more importantly, unethical for the claims that it was making, that in any other judicial election, he probably would have faced ethics sanctions or maybe even removal. But instead, he won election to the state Supreme Court. A complaint of some sort was filed, and the other six justices split 3-3, the three progressives, the three conservatives. And so Gableman went unpunished and was able to hold the seat. So the deja vu here is stunning, that once again, you know, Wisconsin has been what used to be a laboratory of democracy has become this laboratory of right-wing behavior.
Right, right. And of a body politic that doesn't represent the people at all. I mean, this idea, what's in effect that right had a 50-50 state to some extent, ends up not looking 50-50 at all when you look at the politicians and who's holding office and who's making decisions. It's outrageous. It's a great example of what democracy shouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, without a doubt there. We're talking to Mark Jacob here about the week's headlines. And one of the big stories yesterday was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi making it official that she would basically be stepping down from leadership. She'll still be an active part of the caucus, of course. And again, in kind of that Hunter Biden realm, it just seems like right-wing media can't cover something without a villain. And especially even after the vicious, brutal assault on her husband, which they still treat like something funny. It's the whole thing was rather unseemly yesterday and leading up to it.
Yeah. What is the name of that idiot, Dinesh D'Souza, the guy who did the 2000 Mules thing? He had some tweet yesterday about how, well, now she can go get hammered. Hello. So they're still making jokes about a home invader fracturing the skull of an 82-year-old man. They still think that's hilarious. And, honestly, I think that was a factor in the Republicans doing so poorly in this last midterms was all the jokes they were telling about Paul Pelosi. I mean, it's just so unseemly. And there are plenty of decent people in this country who don't like that kind of crap. But, Pat, I can't help but think that the whole focus on Hillary and on Nancy Pelosi is that it's just misogynistic to a great extent, that it's an attempt to, if you look at the splits on who votes for whom, it's dramatic. I'm not sure it's ever been this dramatic in this country as far as, more men voting Republican and more women voting Democrat for the Democratic Party. So I feel like that the Republicans have kind of leaned into that kind of toxic masculinity, we hate it when women are in power kind of mentality, which is ridiculous. And when you see how so many female politicians conduct themselves, Christine Whitmer being a great example, or Gretchen Whitmer. And I was thinking Christine Whitman, who was
Whitman. The former, I know I make that
governor
mistake,
of yes. New York, mm-hmm. and I mean, New Jersey. Boy, I'm getting that wrong. And it's that's why everyone needs a fact checker, Pat. Everyone needs an editor.
Yes.
And nobody gets it right the first time. But anyway, there are a lot of powerful and admirable women in politics, and that threatens some people. I don't know why it does. More the merrier for me, competent people.
Oh, and we won't even get more into the clown show that the Republican caucus is going to be as they try to pick a speaker and how that poor speaker has to, ride herd on them. But instead, in these last 2 minutes, we're not going to solve all of the problem of campaign debates. But I have said that, look, Republicans killed debates. There's no doubt about that. But maybe they did us a favor because they were turning into TV spectacles. I mean, we don't do job interviews that way. Why don't we find a way, a format that says, okay, we're bringing the candidates in together. We're doing intense Q&A. We're doing as much follow-up as necessary till we get the answer. None of this stopwatch stuff, no live audience. And again, I know it sounds like a fantasy, but I wonder, Mark, because you see more of the industry than I do, do you think that there could be any movement that media sites would adopt build a better mousetrap?
Well, I love that idea. I mean, in that way, bring them in, ask some questions, ask follow-ups, no time frame, just as long as it takes to get them to actually answer the questions. And, And then you take the highlights and you present those to the people. I think the journalists could do it and should do it, but I bet the politicians wouldn't go for it. I think they kind of like it the way it is, and they would hate being edited, because then they would have to answer the questions so they wouldn't get on air. But that ought to happen. I mean, there's the whole obsession with style points in debates is a bad thing. I mean, it was the Fetterman thing. They were talking about, well, you know, is he going to win this debate? They should have been asking the question about whether, because of his stroke, whether he will be able to fulfill the duties of the office. That would be a grown-up question.
Right. Well, all right. We'll try to solve this again in 2 weeks, Mark. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks so much.
All right.
All right. Have a great weekend. UW Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher joins us next. You're up north. Well, the Grateful Dead ushers in Dan Schumacher, Athletic Director at UW Eau Claire, to help us preview the weekend in sports, but also look back at last night's Packer disaster. Maybe Packer football is gratefully dead, at least for a time. It's just not what it used to be, Dan.
No, I teased somebody going back to the Lynn Dickey years.
Honest to God, I think that if they were to put Lynn Dickey jerseys on sale now, I think that if the team is like this next year, no, people won't have Rodgers jerseys on anymore. They'll put the Lynn Dickey jerseys on. Why not? I would at this point.
Like we talked off air, I mean, off the line here, it just doesn't look the same. I don't get it. I don't understand what's wrong. At the same time, Christian Watson has come on. He's kind of made people forget about that first week's drop pass. So
yeah, finally, mm-hmm. after the Dallas game and two more last night, I'm like, okay, I think this kid's going to work out.
Yeah, kid had nice hands on the first touchdown. I mean, he was in traffic. He was in the corner of the end zone. He got his feet in. He didn't bobble the ball. He went up and got it at the highest point, which you're trained to do, you're coached to do. So, yeah, I think he's coming along nicely.
And the Titans were able to engage in a little trickery. You know, Tannehill faked him out on one snap. And then in another, you know, Derrick Henry actually threw a little 3-yard jump pass to Austin Hooper, which, again, nobody saw coming. But you almost feel that that's the kind of thing teams can do to the Packers now, that they can't be ready for every contingency.
Right, right. It was a showing by Travis Henry or Derrick Henry, too, the running back. Man, is he a stud?
He is, yep. So Packers are off now until the end of Thanksgiving weekend, a Sunday night game in Philly. And meanwhile, the Bucks are in Philly tonight to play the 76ers. And let me review the state high school football championships. Division 7, Eau Claire Regis is your state champ, beating Shiocton 41-7. Division 6, Stratford over Mondovi 32-14. 5, La Crosse Aquinas defeated Mayville 22-14. And in Division 4, Columbus beat Catholic Memorial 23-21. The Division 3 game is at 10 o'clock this morning, West Salem versus Monroe. Division 2 is 1 o'clock, West Apeer versus Kettle Moraine. And the Division 1 championship, 4 o'clock today, Mukwonago versus Kimberly, all at Camp Randall. As a guy who oversees the UW-Eau Claire football program and has overseen plenty of others, is that our state high school championships, are they like appointment viewing for you?
They are. They're also very cheap on the recruiting budget because they're all on television.
Leave it to you to go that way. Where you crack one open and get your legal pad out. Good for you. That's great.
Right. That's right. So there's some advantages to scouting players on a state championship team, which most coaches will do, because once you have a kid, you get a kid from a state championship high school team, he knows how to win, and he comes into your program with that mindset. So, you know, a kid from Regis here locally, you know, they've been winning as long as I've been in Eau Claire, they've been winning. And we have two or three kids on our roster, and they're just winners as kids. And so I can result on their area here. State championships is a wonderful time for high school football players, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
We're moving in now. The WIAC starts playoffs tomorrow. So the NCAA Division III playoffs start tomorrow. So Whitewater hosts Aurora University, at 1 o'clock, and then lacrosse travels to Wartburg, Iowa, for a 1 o'clock start. And then down in Madison at Verona High School is the host location for the Isthmus Bowl. And that is the third place team in the league of the CCIW, which is College and Conferences of Illinois and Wisconsin, versus the YX. So River Falls versus Washington University out of St. Louis. So a lot of plenty of football left still in the YX.
It's funny, Washington University out of St. Louis. I remember hearing that as a UW Eau Claire student in the mid 80s. And, you know, again, perennial is the word that you think of. It's like they're in these championships all the time. And I guess I imagine that's a particular focus of that school, or is it fair to say that they're a well-rounded institution as well?
Well, you know what? I put them in the top five in the country. And what I'm saying to you is, athletically, they're top to bottom. They're great. They're great at every sport. They're good at everything. But you know what's funny is that most people think of a great place like Alabama. Well, Alabama is a great school, but it's not a Stanford. And there's a lot of schools that are just not a WashU or an MIT or a John Hopkins or a Williams College. These are all elite private medical schools that are able to recruit the best of the best. And that's why they're always on top. Even the top academic institutions produce some of the best athletics in college. So you can win with smart kids.
Yeah. Well, and now the whole landscape has changed with this whole name, image, likeness deal that, you know, where the kids, I call them kids, of course, you know, can, you know, reap financial benefits from that. Is that a Division I thing only, or do you have to deal with that at D3?
It really is a Division I thing. I mean, we have very little impact on us, even with the size of our community compared to, say, UW-Platteville. The opportunities are even less to gain NIL money, promotions, and sponsorship as a player. We don't have that really. We have two players total, and it's not even a cash transaction. It's more about wearing garments and swag. So it hasn't really metabolized into something greater, and that we have to combat some things and, from a compliance standpoint, have to worry about right now.
How about you? Can we sell your name, image, and likeness?
I'm for sale for the right price all the time.
Okay. I will not save that tape, I promise. Last thing, the Badger basketball teams, men and women, are heading to the Caribbean. One to the Bahamas, one to the Virgin Islands to play in Thanksgiving tournaments. This is something that's continued to grow over the years. What are your thoughts on that as an AD? I'm sure at Division I you get TV money and everything else, but that kind of travel, is it a net positive in the end, or is it, can it be a drag on a program?
It could be a financial drag, but it's a huge recruiting tool. We use that too. Like yesterday, Kim Woody and I just solidified contracts to go out to California for opening weekend. Now we turn around and sell that to the prospective student athletes, recruits, saying, hey, if you come here, you're going to fly out, get on a plane, just like big time, and go out to California and play a volleyball tournament. So, you know, our men's basketball team went to, where'd they go? Shoot. Costa Rica. And so they take a trip every 4 years. So they always tell a kid when we're recruiting them, we're going to take a trip. You're going to have some good times and be able to see some of the world and travel a little bit. So those are the upsides to that, because the kid, you know, a lot of kids don't get a chance to go to Costa Rica in their lifetime.
Right.
You know, well, so this becomes a selling tool in the recruiting process.
Very nice. All right. Dan, happy Thanksgiving. We're off next Friday. Maybe talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Happy hunting to everybody too. You know, national holiday this week.
Yeah, no kidding. That's right. Thanks for bringing that up again. Appreciate it. All right, Dan, talk to you later. On Monday, John Calabrese of Dunn County talks about that healthcare referendum that asked, how do voters feel about the idea of a national nonprofit health insurance plan for Americans? We'll find out what the results were and what he gleaned from that. A reminder, follow us all day long, Up North News WI on socials. You can follow me at Facebook, Pat Kreitlow Up North, or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. All right, go have fun. Work hard, play hard, enjoy the day. See you Monday. Tonight.